please, and your name.
Patrice.
That's right. Was I the four things that I was suggesting that you focus on yesterday?
Yeah.
And then no, they're not anybody else's list. They're just four things that I was suggesting you practice being aware of. The first one was 100% of as much as you could, full attention, like really about giving attention as fully as possible. It's just that momentum of like, can I really, really, really be here for this, whatever the thing is. So that was the first one. The second one was which also I was saying again today, because it's like not to add. Because as soon as something happens, I elucidated that a bit this morning as well, is there's what happens on all the time, and somebody today was using the word, you know, we get bombarded by things that happen. They can thick and fast sometimes. And so stuff happens, but there's two things that happen. There's whatever it is that happens, a word, a sight, a sensation, and then there's what we do with that. And they're not the same, but they happen so close together. And if we can put more attention in how we're responding than the thing itself, we have some space when we do that. When we don't do that, there's just the thing. And we just like it, or we don't like it, or we worried about it without knowing that's what's happening. Because the thing and the quality of whatever that experience is affects us. It's got a flavor in some form or another, and it will affect us. But when we look at it, we're getting the effect, but we don't know we are. But when we look at our mind, how is it in here in the face of this, whatever this is, this eyebrow being raised? What's that like? When we get used to, like, and how is it touching me, in what way, then that is what we can do something about. We cannot do anything about the fact that these things are happening. We're not in control of it, inside ourselves or outside of ourselves. But then what happens to that, what we do with that, is the only place we can make some adjustment. And it's that, if we do make some adjustment, we will then affect some change. And if we don't know that or do that, we make no change. It's just, if it's unpleasant, we hate it, and then the thing just snowballs on and on. So the way to shift any, make any change in how life unfolds is in the moment between something happens and how am I responding. So that's where we look. And so oh, this is great, I love it. Oh, where'd you get that? I want one of those. I was given delicious food at lunchtime again today, and so I'm like, I want this recipe and this recipe. We immediately add, if it's pleasant, then we want it, and how can we get it? And if it's unpleasant, we immediately add, oh my God, this is awful, and how dare you? And we aren't taking the space to be reflective. And so shh means don't just jump into the next, be automatically triggered to react. Take a moment and just go like, what's this like? And then we have some space, and then we have some choice. And then we'll be more skillful, because we all are skillful. We all do care. We just get, that gets covered up by the immediacy of the reaction. So that was a second one. So full, and then shh. And then I was suggesting, and there's various things. These are just different techniques that I'm teaching you here, but is when we're beset by a lot of thinking, repetitive thinking, a kind of proliferated thinking, we get really entangled in a churning scenario, it's got a style. It's got a theme. You know, it's worrying, or it's judging, or it's, you know, frustration or something. It's got so rather than the detail, because the thinking is so seductive and so powerful that we believe all the thoughts and the stories and we get into the storyline, we want to come behind the storyline. So this is a thriller. Oh no, this is a comedy here. Oh, this is actually really a tragedy. So we can see the theme, because that way we can get in touch with our feelings. When we're in the story, he said, she said, oh, I don't want this to happen. We're already ahead in the detail, and we're not behind in the self-reflection. But if we make it a general theme thing, worrying feels like, so then we can get a handle on it. It's worrying, and that feels like, right, my throat gets tight, I start frowning, I start lifting up, whatever it is. Then I can now be with the experience instead of lost in the storyline and the players and the expectations and the judgments and all of the carried away from my immediate experience. Thinking, of course, that will help. which is why we do all that, but it doesn't help. It just inflates and prolongs and proliferates. So that was the third one. So the first one was full attention. Second one was don't add anything. Third one is, you know, see if you can see the theme or the flavor or whatever. And then the fourth one, what was the fourth one yesterday?
Embody.
Question it. Embody was in there. I slipped it in there. I keep slipping it in there because it's so important. It could have been easily the fourth one, but in this particular case. And yesterday, the fourth one I was suggesting yesterday was question. Like, is this true? You know, what I'm thinking here, is it the truth? And you don't do that often because you don't want to get too busy, but it's really useful to undermine the assumptions that are in your thinking, to question them. You know, what am I? The other one that I slipped in that somebody mentioned here that's essential and it's got to be in here is body, especially in the step of what's the theme of what's going on? Okay, let's say worrying. And then you immediately go with, oh, it's worrying. Then you immediately go into what? Into your body, so that you can be with worrying as an experience rather than a story and a storyline and a futuring and a solving. It's just like directly, worrying feels like this. Yes, it's a bridge to your present experience, not to explaining them or fixing them, but actually experiencing. Oh, I'm worrying. And then we can, oh, what we'll do is then, it's the truth. It's not that this person is an idiot or something. It's like, I am worrying. That's my part here, because that's, I can only do anything about my part. And now I can feel what it is to be worried. And now I can let worrying be here. If I can't feel it, then I'm actually trying still to avoid it and blame somebody or change the outcome or plan for a future better or something. If I can say, oh, it's allowing it. It's allowing it to be in, up, known, held, accommodated, and eventually understood. And when it's understood, it's integrated. It's like, oh, I get it. I'm worrying. That's what my part of this whole drama is going on, is it's worrisome. Then we have some compassion for the fact that we're worried. And out of being worried, we're saying and thinking things which probably don't help, you know. So, but to be able to say, oh, this is how it is for me. It's worrisome. I'm worrying. Ah. The space is allowing things calm down. And out of that space, we can choose. Is it going to be helpful to say something? Is it better to just, like, be kind to myself and wait? Let the whole thing settle down. What? You know, and how we then proceed, we will then proceed. But we'll come from a much more sensible, calm, understand grandma place than the being triggered kid place. The whole point is to understand. Not to fix or to do it well. It's to understand what's happening. When it's difficult, when it's neurotic, when it's appropriate, we want to understand. And we learn by observing good and bad behavior, skillful and unskillful behavior. We learn. We see, oh, look, that was unskillful. It worked like this. This is what then happened. This is how it felt. Oh, I see. That's how I learn. I learn by the experience of what's going on. We're bringing a consciousness to it. We're not trying to do it right. We think that if I can learn all this and write it all down and remember the steps, then I'll be a saint and I won't get into trouble. It doesn't work that way. There's too many other things that we can't do anything about. And anyway, you're trying too hard and you're being a separate sense of self that's trying to be a nice one. Instead, just observe truly the immediacy of what's going on and what's that like. And through that direct observing of experience, we learn. And the learning, who knows how? So I don't teach people what they'll learn. I teach people the technique of looking, so that then the learning will happen in everyone's own way, you know, you can't. So we always want to be ahead of ourselves. We think, if I do this, then this will happen. But it does happen. We become freer and wiser, but we don't do it by thinking ahead of ourselves. We do it by being right here with this experience. And we'll learn from that. Who knows what we'll learn, but we will learn. All right? Yep. Hi. Name? Bree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then even within my life, kind of my relationship to mindfulness is very like, I don't want to do it, and I don't know if I'm going to know that. So that I'm just watching those cycles.
Going round and
so
round.
Mm. And I'm just wondering if that's an indication that I should get something, that I want to find some way to
change something, or
whether just staying with it and watching it.
Mm-hmm. What do I think of that? I mean, one of the things is that we have, you know, personalities, we have styles of dealing with life, which will repeat, you know, and we, you know, there are people whose tendency is to shrink, there are people whose tendency is to push, there are people whose tendency is to distract, you know, as a coping mechanism that we learn really young. We have these different styles of dealing with things. And so you'll see them, and then you'll see them again, and then you'll see them again, because that's your style. And so it may feel like it's, oh, I've got this, oh no, it's happening again, kind of feeling that you're caught in a sort of stuck in some loop. But it's actually because it's going to keep happening, because that's your nature, and that's what you've learned to do. And until you're completely liberated, it will do it that way. You're not going to suddenly get my personality just because you're a meditator, for instance. So that kind of, so it can appear that you feel more stuck than in fact you are. You're just seeing it. A second thing I would say to everyone, not just, and I'll come more back to your question again, Bree, but in as we do this practice, we see more. That's the whole point. And it can be so discouraging because, you know, initially we didn't see and we thought we were sort of okay. And then we looked and we saw that we were completely neurotic. And that's like, oh my goodness, you know, it's like it's unbelievable to see. And it can be really discouraging. In fact, it's actually good news because if you can't see, there's nothing you can do. There's no choice you can possibly make because you don't have a choice because it's nothing you can do. And so be encouraged, even though that's easy to say. And in your case, you know, you may be seeing something over and over and over. It's just because you keep seeing and it keeps being your style. So don't be discouraged by that. It's like, yep, there's more to see. There's always more to see. So that's the second thing I would say. A third thing about, there's always more to learn. And there are other practices to learn and apply and try. And I think it's a really good thing to try different techniques or I don't know. I don't think it's good to have too many different styles. I remember when I first started practicing with Goenka, hearing somebody, whether it was Goenka or somebody, say, if you're looking for water, you know, you go out into the orchard and you're looking to dig a well for water. If you dig 3 feet and there's no water and you go somewhere else and another 3 feet and somewhere else, and you're never going to find water. You have to actually keep going. Sort of as an analogy to don't, you just pick a style and go for it and really learn something. So I think deep learning is useful. I really experiment with some aspect. When I said, for instance, yesterday, I took doubt and I really made that a main thing that I pursued for a long time just to get to really familiar with it. I think it's a very skillful way of learning some of these practices. But at the same time, there are a variety of techniques, there's a variety of styles of teaching, there's a variety of teachers with different styles, and I think it's useful to be a bit of a dilettante and find certain ways that you really like, and then half a dozen or something ways and really deepen those, so really get good at concentration, really do a lot of metta, really get familiar with the hindrances, really get familiar with the awakening factors, really, you know, deepen metta, concentration, and vipassana. Do some of the sort of foundation, you know, get familiar with some of the basic skills. The whole four foundations of mindfulness is a wonderful one. And get really practice them deeply so that they're really useful tools for you. And because sometimes this one is a useful tool, and other times this one is actually much more useful in this scenario for my wiring and my life at the moment. And so don't just do one or two things. But don't do too many shallow things either, because that doesn't, it's not useful. You know, you want to have practices that you can use as refuges, and you'll only use something as a refuge if it's really available. If you have to think about it and try and remember and go back to your notes, then it's not a refuge. You know, it's an idea. And so really have a lot of access to the state that your heart is in. Get very familiar with that. And really recognize whether your tendency is to be greed or hatred or delusion, and get very familiar with what that's like and when it grips you and what that feels in your body. And so you recognize it really well, for instance, things like that. That's my advice to you. But don't be discouraged. And don't feel like you're missing something. And we're all missing something. Until we're awakened, we know we're all missing lots. So keep going. It's good. And when you see stuff that you don't like, it's great. You know, people come to us and they're like, oh God, I saw all it. I go like, yes! It's the people who think they're fine and they don't see anything that you really got to watch out for those people. Partly, the first thing I would say is don't worry. You know, be reassured. You can't do it wrong. You're just going to try these different tools. You're learning how to use your toolbox of techniques, which is a good approach for a situation. And it becomes more obvious with more experience. Just like, you know, when a craftsman is building, a builder is building a house, you know, he doesn't say, I wonder if I should use the hammer or the measuring tape at this point. I'll try. I'll just see if the measure. No, actually, you know, because they just get really familiar and they just reach for the square when they need the square and they know what to do. And it's just, it's a matter of skill building, you know, when it's appropriate. But even when it's inappropriate and you try something, you know, you say you're anxious and you try some kindness. And that's not a good one because always that's a good one to go to if you're anxious. But let's say you're sleepy. And so you try, you're sort of dull. And so you try, I'm going to get really, really precise around my breath. You try that. And you find that you don't have enough energy to get precise around. In fact, the breath is so, because your energy is low, the breath is so regular, it's completely boring and it sends you completely to sleep. And that wasn't a good idea. Okay, so instead, now I'm actually going to sweep my attention all the way up and down through my body and look for all different kinds of things. That's much more interesting. That's going to keep me awake more, I realize. Or, you know, so you've tried something or something else and it doesn't actually shift the energy very much. So you're just playing with energy, really. You're experimenting. It's an art. And so an artist isn't born an artist. Well, there are a few of those, I have to admit. But on the whole, they have to learn. You know, it's to refine your skills and it's a sort of dynamic. So it's sort of that way. But you don't need to judge it or feel like this is wrong, I'm not doing it right. That's what we do, and it's because we, little ones, want to be ahead of the game and get it, and be good, and succeed, and be free. And we're actually ahead. It's not like that. It's a growing, seeing, learning. It's a slower, more organic unfolding. And so we can trust that. Our intention to care, to look, to want to know more is the point, and we will. And so, you know, so okay, so that just put me more to sleep. Now I know. I've learned something here. Not that it was wrong, but I just learned that was, in that case, that's what that did. And we might have to do the same thing over many times for it to be really readily available the next time. And that's an okay way to learn. It's how we learn language. It's how we learn to walk. It's how we learn as little kids. We don't learn by getting it. We learn by doing it, and then we learn, okay, this is an edge of, if you go too near the edge of this, you'll fall down and bump your nose. You might have to bump your nose quite a few times before it's really there for you. But that's okay. We're not racing here. There's no judgment here. There's no failure here. There's just more suffering until there's less. It's not about that. We do that. You see we do that. And you see that that doesn't help. That doesn't speed up the journey, doesn't make you better, quicker by judging yourself. In fact, it's the opposite. Yeah. Hi. Your name? Hi, Rhonda. I know your name, Rhonda. Just forgotten. Ah, very interesting.
Okay, you're a bit of a pusher, which I already know about myself, and want to get things done. And today, I got into the obsessive thinking about the situation and the story, and then it just kind of went, you know, really off. You can feel everything tighten up, and well, that's very interesting.
Yeah, it's good feedback, you know. I mean, I similarly, I didn't have anything wrong with my body, and I was young, but when I remember it was during the fourth retreat that I sat with Goenka-styled, fourth 10-day retreat, somewhere in the middle of the retreat, and I think I was mentioning this yesterday, and there's such tension went for a strivey person like me who's trying to be a good student and do it right and being told, do this and don't do this, and so I'm like... not moving a muscle, you know, being told to keep completely still for an hour at a time. And I'm like, okay, I can do this. And it was like I was getting all wound up and tight, and there was aching and tension and frowning and headaches. And at some point, something in me just quit. It just was like, I just gave up. I don't know how or why, or I didn't mean to, but everything just it's like something burst in me. And there was no pain. And I was like, it was so clear that the pain was my resistance and my struggling and my trying so hard, and which was all, you know, like to be respected. It wasn't that I was being bad or anything. I was just overdoing it, which is my nature. And it was just really clear that it was completely associated, as you just described in yourself, when everything gets all tight and wound up, that it just really echoes through the body. And you may have more than that going on in your particular leg, but you can see the exaggeration of it, exacerbated by all the tension around it. Things build. The Buddha has this great teaching about darts. He uses the word dart. I can't imagine what they had in his day and age that were darts. But anyway, there's the first dart, which is your leg hurts. You know, and then there's anxiety, which is another dart. You know, then there's aversion to the anxiety that makes the leg hurt. And then, you know, then there's blaming yourself for being anxious or whatever. They just, he calls them like the second dart, but it's sometimes like the 500th dart. We just add. Well, maybe there's nothing you can do about your leg, but there is something you can do about the tension to make it worse, or the aversion to the pain. That's, you know, I was talking to Jane yesterday about that. It's like there is the pain in the back, but if we then wish it weren't so, we're going to tighten up and it's probably going to make it worse. If we can just have more space and some tender, hold it with some care and respect, we're not adding any more negativity on top or resistance on top, then there is just whatever it is. There's just the aching. It's aching. There's aching which we resist, which is suffering, or there's aching, which would we prefer, of course, you know. And so it's seeing all of the layers that we add that just exacerbate whatever the situation is. And so we want to see what we're doing, that we're adding. And then, as I just was saying before, it's not that we want to stop adding. It's we want to see that when we add, it makes it worse. It's more suffering. And when we don't add, it's much more free, appropriate, manageable. That's the learning. It isn't doing it right that's the learning. It's seeing the effect. Oh, I see. And when the system gets that, and as a little kid, it might take 4 or 5 times of bumping their nose before they get it. But when we get it, we don't have to use our intelligence to tell ourselves not to. The system won't do it because it knows already. So it goes inside into the deeper knowing rather than the intellectual capacity. It's not theoretical knowing. So when we try so hard to think and figure it out and remember and take notes and all the rest of it, it's useful, but the real knowing happens in a much more profound, unthinking way. And the way we get that is again and again seeing and experiencing directly this. When this happens, it's like this. When this happens, it's like this. No judgment, it's like this. When I get more wound up, the pain really grows. When I get less wound up, the pain diminishes. I know this. I see this over and over. And then when that's seen over and over, the system will not get so wound up. It knows better. You, it's not about you. It's about the whole system. It's a bigger... Yeah. There you go. So that's questioning. That's right. You're questioning that belief that your little self believes, oh, or something, whatever. Yeah. Yeah, questioning. Questioning and observing. This practice is questioning and observing. And questioning meaning being curious. What's going on? That's what I mean by questioning. Not trying to get answers, but just, what is this? What's this like? Is this true? What's this like? I hear Ajahn Sumedho, this senior I was telling you yesterday, I heard him on an audio thing. Maybe I heard him in person, but I can certainly hear his voice saying he was struggling with something. He was going to be meeting family members. Something was coming up and he was worrying about something. And he got in touch with and realized he was meditating. He's doing walking meditation and he's churning away about whatever this family scenario is. And then he said, oh, it's jealousy. Then I can hear his voice saying, it's jealousy. Jealousy feels like this. So the step is after, once you've named it, that's what I was talking over here to Tracy. Is it Tracy? Patrice. The T-R and C, that's pretty good for me. that's how it works in my head. This is the theme. It's, oh, it's jealousy. And then immediately he goes into it. Feels like, how does this feel? This is what it feels like to be jealous. Then you're holding the jealousy. Not dealing with the family members who make him jealous, but this is my experience. It feels like this. Wound up. Oh, wound up feels like this. And then the byproduct is more pain in the leg. Ah, that's what's happening. That's all we need to do. See it. The unwinding will happen without deliberate, without your ego doing it.
But then there's a force. After this feels like this.
Yes.
There's a force.
I mean, it's in your body and you feel it. You don't have to think of the next thing to do. If you're doing that with the overarching principle, which I told you this morning, of care, you just care. And when you care for yourself and that you're jealous and it feels like this, there's a way of holding your experience. The wise one of you is going like, oh, sweetheart, that's so painful to be jealous. You're not deliberately doing that, and I'm putting words on a feeling, but the feeling is one of like, oh, empathy, respect. That's all. Yeah, that's the further is having an agenda, adding like, oh, and I don't like this, and how can I not do that? And let me try and remember what my notes were from that retreat. And that doesn't work that way. Because that's back, that's the ego again. That's the little ones again trying to be, they're too big for their boots, trying to do too much work. It's simpler than that. It's simpler, but it's hard just because we're not used to doing this other way. We're used to the thinking way. That's why meditation is difficult and inaccessible. It's just because we're not familiar with it this way and we don't even trust it. Our wise selves, I've been saying this for a few years now, a couple of years, our wise part, the grandma part in my case, is shy. It's brilliant, but it's shy and it's very easily outshouted by all the children. And until the children be quiet and shut up, then there's grandma sitting back there, yeah, just ask me a question, I know. But, oh, no, I think I'm going to do it this way and this way. So calm down and quieten down and shh, shh. And there's grandma. She's always there. But she's not pushy. She's not competing. I always always want to tease you when it's quiet like this. I know you're partly sleepy because of lunch, but I was like, so then you're enlightened, are you? I know. You don't have to be asking questions. I can always think like that. Hi. Your name again?
Ashley.
Ashley, right. Yes, yes.
And so you had said that, you know, there's something to be appreciated.
Yes,
remorse.
Yes.
So I was curious to know about the ego itself or that child. Is there something to be appreciated about that child or the ego?
I mean, it's, yes. It's first of all, it's trying very hard to be our friend and help us. You know, it's the deer. I had this retreat once, and this woman was like, our dear little mind, it's working so hard to try and help. Be grateful. It's just that it isn't super efficient. It just, you know, it doesn't have the experience of grandmotherhood. It can't. And so it can't provide the answers. To try and get more and to get rid of and to space things out isn't that skillful. So, but it isn't, it's not that it's useless, but it's not worth pursuing either, you know. It's like, but we don't have to make it a problem. We're not trying to stop it, but we're learning some other thing. So the ego is absolutely necessary for survival. It's how we've survived. It's completely necessary just to run day-to-day lives. It gets food on the table, it pays bills, it finds friends, it gets rid of enemies, you know, it avoids danger. It's brilliant. It's fantastic. But that's not where we're going now. We can do that really well, and that's not enough for what we're wanting. We're deepening to some other level here, and so not that to criticize it, but let's not keep developing it any further, because it can only do so much. It's a limited thing. Let's develop what we've been neglecting that can really help. That's all. Yes, you don't have to be in argument with anything. You're not trying to fix in that way. You're just growing. Is that right? Yeah. Okay. Enough? Yep, enough chit-chat. So what I'd like to do now is, as we did yesterday, a shortish, maybe 15-minute little guided meditation. Then you can go walking in the sunshine.